Big Ten only basketball now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, listen, a team's always going to be better at home. A young team's always going to be better. I got some grief for calling this team young. I don't really agree with that.
Why would you get grief? They're in their top rotation.
Well, I think it's I think it's the starting backcourt thing, which I get. Okay, you have two experienced players. You know, you're 221st in KenPom in Division I experience.
Out of how many? 360?
362. They were in the 260s, and there's another statistic, and I'm struggling to remember what it is. It's like lineup continuity or something like that.
Well, Xavier Johnson just hasn't played a lot for various reasons.
They're only returning two starters because one of them became a starter when the other one got hurt and lost a whole season, nearly a whole season last year. You know, I mean, they had six new players. They turned over half the roster in the offseason.
And that's why this team was not picked in the top 10
or the
top five of the league.
This is kind of one of those things where I don't know who's listening, you know, here, but I feel like when I say this, people think I'm sort of talking down to them or scolding them. I don't mean for that to be the case. But all offseason, you and I both said this team may have some problems. This team doesn't look perfect. Like all offseason, we said, yeah, there's talent there. There's a way it makes sense. You can take that team and add those pieces up to another tournament appearance, to some nice wins, to, you know, another 20-win season, a nice little bridge to, you know, year four when, you know, you're going to bring in, I think, at least one player that I think is going to be really good for Indiana and Liam McNeely, and other guys are going to be a year older and yada, yada, yada. But, like, I mean, and we weren't the only ones who said, I mean, I think I picked Indiana sixth or seventh in the Big Ten.
But the point is, none of your cohorts picked them higher than
this. And I said, you know, I'm basically just kind of I had Ohio State like 10th. And I was just kind of jumbling them all in together. And by the way, like, it's January, what?
11th.
11th. You know, where was Indiana this time a year ago? They were in the middle of that three-game slide, and we said season's over. And I'm not saying Indiana's going to rip off 9 of 10. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I am suggesting is, you know, a lot of people told fans, you don't normally get better for losing what Indiana lost last year. What Indiana is going to try and do is do it different. And they have, and sometimes it's worked, and more times it hasn't, and there's still half a season left to see if they can pull it together. But it's not like, and you've said this many times, and listen, I'm not saying you shouldn't be frustrated. I'm not saying if you're a fan, you shouldn't be disappointed. And certainly, I completely understand in the moment, 66-57, you miss 11 free throws, you turn the ball over 18 times, you miss 16, or what was it, 19 threes, albeit a lot of those chasing the game.
Late,
they don't score the last 4 minutes and 40 seconds. Last year when Indiana went to Rutgers, Steve Peichel just pulled a fast one. He threw out that matchup zone. Mike Woodson wasn't ready for it. They couldn't adjust to it in time. Rutgers wins the game. That happens. Sometimes you just get outmaneuvered.
Rutgers shot 32%.
It happens. This was a winnable game that Indiana let go because it made so many mistakes, and I understand why anyone from Mike Woodson on down through fans on message boards or Twitter or whatever would be frustrated by that. But in the wider sense, nobody promised that this team was going to beat the world.
Indiana was a 4.5-point underdog in that game, by the way.
I mean,
to a team that was 0-3.
0-3 in the Big Ten.
Had not won a Big Ten game at home since February 1st and was 8-6 overall.
And almost lost to Stonehill.
Indiana was an underdog in that game by 4.5 points.
Yeah.
Like read the room.
I mean, it's
read the room.
Yeah. And so it's kind of one of those things where I guess my point is, you know, we said this team is going to be figuring stuff out. They may figure it out. There's enough talent there. They may not. And that happens sometimes. And if, you know, we zoom out, and over 5 years, this is the 1 year Mike Woodson, for example, doesn't make the NCAA tournament. Well, then you're allowed to say 4 out of every 5 NCAA tournaments. That's a good baseline to start with. Let's build forward from there after 5 years or 6 years out of it or whatever it was. But in the moment, I don't blame anybody being frustrated. In the wider sense, this is sort of what you should have expected. This team's got talent. It's got pieces. And because so many of those pieces turned over in the offseason and there were so many new faces and there are some clear deficiencies in roster construction.
There's the one right there.
It is struggling to put those pieces together.
And that's a true story. And the statistics bear it out. When Indiana does not score in the paint consistently, there's nowhere else for them to score. And I think that's the part. Here's what fans can be mad about. They can be mad about anything. We never tell fans what to be mad about on this program. But in this modern day and age, how do you not have a guy or more than one guy who can knock down a three at times? That is a fair criticism of the roster construction.
And the flip side of that is what's funny is Indiana until Rutgers, when number one, Rutgers was giving them some open threes. Some of those were good looks. I mean, they airballed some open looks. They also were cranking some late game.
I'm leaving those out. I'm leaving the last. You're down.
So they're kind of like they were. Let's say they were like 7-21, 7-22. So 33% from three. Up until Rutgers, Indiana was first in the conference in Big Ten 3-point accuracy in Big Ten games alone, and it was because they weren't shooting many, but the right guys were shooting them, and so they were going in. And that's kind of been where Mike Woodson's been with this team. That's kind of what he said. He said, we're taking it. And when people were saying, you're not taking enough, you're not making enough, he didn't say we're not making enough. He said we're not. Or he didn't say we're not taking enough. He said we're taking enough. We're not making the ones we're taking. And so if it's people should take Mike Woodson at his word sometimes. What he's telling you when he says that is, I don't want to shoot a ton of threes because this team's not a volume three-point shooting team. What I need is the guys that should be shooting them, making them when they're there. And that's what wasn't happening at times against UConn or
Nebraska
or even a game you win like a Louisville where, and I get it, it's Madison Square Garden. It's a it's a foreign sort of shooting, whatever. I understand that. But listen to what Mike Woods is saying. He's telling you, I don't want this team shooting high volume threes. That's not how we're built. But if the right guys are shooting them, then I think most nights will be okay. And hey, listen, in the same breath, Indiana loses that game by 9, throw everything else out. I will do the math on my phone, literally while we're talking, because I can't do this kind of division. Throw everything else out. Throw everything else out.
I can't talk and chew
gum. The free throw shooting, the turnovers, the Xavier Johnson's ejection, everything.
Rebounding.
Indiana was shooting something like 40.6% in Big Ten play alone, which is only four games. But hey, four games is 20% of your schedule. So like, don't talk about small sample sizes when it's literally one-fifth of your schedule. Indiana was shooting something like 40, a little over 40%. That was first or second in the conference in Big Ten games alone in team three-point accuracy. If they make three more threes at Rutgers, just three of them, that's a tie game, and that's still under, that's 38.6% from three. That's still under their team average through the first four games of Big Ten play. And so my point here is, and again, I think this is what makes, to Mike Woodson, a loss like Rutgers more frustrating, is because it wouldn't have taken much for that game to be in the balance in the last 2 minutes, and then Rutgers thinks, here we go again, and they can't make a shot. And
I'll take it one step even easier than that. Make your free throws.
Yeah, well, but my point is
they were 2 of 10.
Throw everything else out. If Indiana just shoots from three.
Free throws unguarded are easier to make than three-point shots.
But if Indiana shoots from three.
You're not wrong. I'm saying.
It shoots in the first four Big Ten games.
They had multiple opportunities from multiple places, and that's the problem. That's the whack-a-mole problem.
But if you're Mike Woodson, if you are a coach who's got to solve these problems, then that's also the positive spin on it, is this is what it took for us to lose that game.
Yeah.
It took us shooting 4 of 15 from the free throw line.
Out-rebounded.
It took us, missing all these threes. It took 18 turnovers. It took Rutgers pulling out every zone it had in its bag. So
that's why it's a bad loss.
But in the same breath, if I'm Mike Woodson, I'm getting my team together and I'm saying, this is what it took for them to beat us. Do you understand how close I think you are?
Rutgers didn't score in the last 440, as you mentioned.
And then you get
8. Right.
Minnesota at home Friday, Purdue at home Tuesday. You look at your players and say, fellas, do you see how close you are?
That's what the locker room has to say.
That is the way you spin it forward. And we'll see if Indiana can do that.
And that's how you have to spin it forward, because of the things you pointed out there. Yes, it was a very winnable game at times, and you let Rutgers get loose because you couldn't do simple things like make free throws. It's 42-38, and Galloway's at the line shooting two. He misses two. They come down and bang a three off an offensive rebound. The story of the game was in two possessions, back-to-back possessions. That was it. You make your free throws. It's a two-point game. Does Rutgers then start feeling it? I don't know. But what you didn't do, you can't use the Jersey Mike's excuse. The building was half full. Don Fisher told you that on the radio. It wasn't a packed, raucous house.
No.
But they don't beat Rutgers. That's 9 of 11. Rutgers won in the series. 7 of 8.
I think they've won five in a row.
It was six in a row until last.
I think it was February. Five. It was five in a row in that building.
6-7 now overall. They beat them one time, and it was February last year.
Yeah.
When Indiana had to get figured out to get into the NCAA tournament. So I don't know what it is with Rutgers in that sense. You know, the kid hits a 40-footer at the buzzer at the first half. You're like, oh, here we go again. Here we go. Get your tickets. But the turnovers in the last four games, 19 or 18, Kennesaw at home, 19 road, home 4,
yeah.
Road 18. That small sample size of four, it's not different than
And that four is also in a game where you allow 22 offensive rebounds and you're, I think, minus 22 in second chance points or maybe minus 18.
And that's the Nebraska game, right?
No. The four turnover game is Ohio State when you allow 22 offensive rebounds.
And so we're going to correct the offensive. We're going to correct rebounding. Indiana was minus 11 on the glass total, minus 11 offensive rebounds.
Minus 11.
12-1 second chance points at Rutgers. And Rutgers can't score. And they showed you can't score. And that's the frustrating part. So you think you get, okay, look, they didn't have to play perfect against Ohio State to win, and then that's not corrected, and the turnovers come back. That's the frustrating part, I think, in all of this. Why? That's the million-dollar question. And we'll talk about that when we come back after Diane Daly's news headlines. Is it a lineup shakeup? Is it – and we'll get into Xavier Johnson because six-year guys can't do that. That doesn't help anything either. Who's going to handle the ball? Who's not going to put their head down and dribble into three guys and throw it away four or five times a half? You can't do that. You can't. How do you fix that problem if you're Coach Woodson? We'll see if Osterman has any angles. And my final thing I'll leave you to think about during the break, and I was doing this right when you walked in the door, or right before you walked in the door. People are legitimately questioning why Nick Saban is hanging it up at 72. Can't that man live his life? Can he retire and spend his money? I mean, what? People are offended. Oh, what are you doing? Why would you retire? Can a guy spend time with his family? Can he spend all that money he's earned? Can he? He's won seven national championships. When is enough enough? Can Nick enjoy his life? No, it's my football, though. You can't retire now. Well, you know what? He did, and I thought that was interesting. So you had the college basketball, Boeheim, Krzyzewski, Williams, kind of. Now you've got Pete Carroll. Belichick.
Well, Saban. I think on the college side.
72 years old.
I think on the college side, it's also pretty clear.
NIL.
It's not so much a young man's game. It's a do you want to have to reinvent your process?
That is already proven to work.
When you know you're already in the last few years anyway. Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim,
would
Jay
anybody
Wright,
be complaining that
Mike Bray?
Yeah.
You know,
good,
I mean,
good call.
Yeah, I mean, it. There aren't a ton of
Izzo's about the last guy of that group.
Yeah, there aren't a ton of analogs. For Nick Saban in college football, there aren't a lot of like really wizened old football coaches out there. Guys like Richt and Stoops, you know, guys that were kind of around that.
Well, Richt had health issues.
Yeah, Richt had health issues. Les Miles, obviously, kind of eventually sort of.
But it's a 14-hour day, and you're not getting younger.
Yeah,
enjoy your retirement.
But again, I think the issue is more, you know, you may still take pleasure in the process. But if the process is changing so dramatically that you've got to change with it, and you know you might recruit a guy for 2 years and say, oh, we beat out every other five-star
Georgia,
program,
LSU,
we, you know, when he came to our campus, he's the number one something something in the country, and it turned out he's just maybe, you know, playing as a true freshman is a semester too soon for him, but boom, he's in the portal in December. You know, it's one of those things where like the sport will be fine and the sport will survive.
Yeah,
and there are just a wave of guys that say, I'm just too old to really feel the passion to evolve with it when it is a 14-hour day, when it is, okay, again, I had this formula that worked. This is how I did it. This is why it worked.
Now you've changed the integers.
Yes, and now I've got to decide whether I want to keep doing that or whether I want to step away and say, hey, let somebody else come in and figure it out.
The only thing that constantly changes is, that's right, it's change. Let Nick retire in peace and quiet. Can we please? The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour rolls on. Enjoy Happy Hour with us. And then, well, enjoy it at the Crazy Horse Tavern. Full bar, 80 domestic craft and imported beers, hundreds of rare and high-end whiskeys and tequilas. They're open daily. 11 a.m. for lunch, dinner, or late night, and brunch on the weekends. More with Osterman in the studio, live on a Thursday. Diane Daly's news headlines are next.
Suddenly you're, what, 5-2 in the league, and you're ahead of Purdue, and you've got a quad one win. And it's just like people don't want to hear this stuff because, number one, everybody just kind of wants it to happen. Number two, you certainly don't want to hear it after a loss because you want to wash the bad taste of that out of your mouth. Number three, there's the fear that it may not happen, but you just got to let it – you got to continue to kind of watch it and chart it and see where it goes because, again – there was a time last season when we said Indiana was a Final Four contender. There was a time last season when we said Indiana looked like it was in a tailspin. There was a time last season we said, oh, Final Four contender again. And then by the time they got to the NCAA tournament, probably a rung or two below kind of that lead group that needed matchups to fall a certain way, and they didn't, obviously. The point is, seasons change. They evolve. You just have to wait for them.
And that's the hard part about being a fan. You want the instant gratification. Well, look at Purdue. That's a great example. They're 3-2. Now Painter's all mad at the league because people rush the court every time they get beat. Well, right. It's hard out there. It is a jungle out there. 20 games in the Big Ten season. Two of those took place before the Kansas and the Auburn games, which were interesting in those two things. Indiana beats Maryland. They led Maryland by 23 points. Nobody remembers that. Unless you listen to this program, because I bring it up all the time. Indiana won a game at Michigan. Now, Michigan, Indiana's a season ender. They ended Michigan season. They've ended Maryland season. They've ended Ohio State season as well. It's in there. The inconsistency shouldn't be surprising. When your top eight rotation is what? Six sophomores or freshmen, and the other two are Trey Galloway and what? Xavier Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your top eight. Walker's your ninth, maybe. Okay, so you're three.
Well, and the Walker, again, like it's the evolution of things. Walker has kind of moved up the pecking order because he's allowed you to play smaller. Well, here's a lineup that works sometimes, but then sometimes it doesn't. And that's where I think Mike Woodson gets back into, the criticisms of, I don't say criticisms. It was pointed to me, though, that he mentioned three seniors. He went out of his way to say, I got four seniors. One of them's giving me everything I need. The other three are not. Like that told me, again, take Mike Woodson
at his word.
At his word. Listen to what he's saying because he's telling you, here's what I need. Here's what gets us there. And that's on a night when, Trey Galloway's got, I think, five assists, but also three or four turnovers. Obviously, Xavier Johnson is ejected and has 2 points and five turnovers. Anthony Walker, I think, doesn't score, maybe has 1 point. He's only got 1 point in his last two games. That's on a night when Mike Woodson is right to look at his seniors and say, you're the ones that need to be able to steady this ship. This is how we win ugly games like this, on the road, in maybe not a tough environment, but it's certainly not a place that's been kind to us anytime recently against a coach whose system matches up poorly with us. And I've thought about this a little bit. It seems like Woodson has struggled the most in Big Ten play with the teams that play at the extremes. The teams that
super
are just,
slow or super
just,
fast.
That are just all like dogged, muck it up defense, don't care about the other end. We are just going to make life miserable for you trying to score the ball. Or the teams that are all just spread the floor, shoot a bunch of threes, don't care about defense, don't care about lineups. Penn State, Iowa, we're just gonna see if we can't outrun you to the finish line, basically. And it's been those sorts of teams that it's other than like the occasional just like. Hey, we had a bad day at Michigan State or whatever, which is allowed. That's allowable. It's been those sorts of teams that have seemed to give him the most trouble, if that makes sense.
And Rutgers, the proof is in the pudding. I had those stats up because I had the stats were before the game. It says with a win tonight, Rutgers would win would be 9-2 in their 11 games against Indiana. That goes back to 2015 when they came in the league. That's amazing. It's amazing because that was Tom Crean. That was Archie Miller, and that was Mike Woodson. And Rutgers has won 9 of 11. I don't know what it is. Bogey teams, booger teams, whatever it's going to be. How do you stop turning the ball over? I mean, those four games, that's an amazing number. You want to say it's a style problem with Kennesaw State? Okay, fine. I'll hear it. Nebraska, I saw the stat from Seth Tau during that game. Nebraska was 224th in the nation in forced turnovers. That is not Nolan Richardson's 40 minutes of hell or John Thompson defense up there. So you get into that. You come home, you only turn over four times against Holtman, and then you go on the road. Okay, Pikel, defensive, got it, whatever. Quick hand, small, whatever it is. But three of the four, how do you stop turning the ball over?
Yeah, I mean, and again, if
I have my thoughts.
If you're Mike Woodson, like, maybe there's an extent to which you feel like, hey, this is fixable. You know, because if we just get it down to 12 a game, then
seven more possessions, eight more possessions,
yeah,
six more possessions.
And you can just start subtracting numbers off, obviously, the other team's total or whatever, but it's the actual doing that. It's the getting it there that.
But it's interesting because the turnovers are spaced out so almost equally. It's frightening.
In what way? Like between players?
Yeah.
Or
when you looked at the players, it's all the starters. They turn the ball over all the time. Walker had two, and Sparks had one in his 3 minutes. So he had three off the bench, four off the bench there. But the starters are having the most of this. Now you say they play the most minutes. They should turn it over the most. I'll disagree because Xavier Johnson just played 34 minutes and didn't turn over once.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's 23 minutes. He turns it over five times. Putting your head down and going, I don't know. I don't know. Does Rutgers lull you into that? But what did Nebraska do? They stole it 15 times. That's just lazy. That's inaccurate. That's assuming. That's guessing. Is that a product of youth? I don't know. But what this Indiana team does do that drives me crazy is when they're down six or eight, all of a sudden it's one pass shots. And that is that a product of youth? Yeah, probably a little bit. But when Ware and Renew are 5 of 10, 6 of 10, now it's hard to score against a Murray. I get that. That's not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, folks. It's not. You start doing me instead of we, and I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you fix Malik Renew from turning it over three or four times a game. He's down there in the muck. Ware's down there in the muck. Johnson's got to make better decisions. He's been here 6 years. What are we waiting for?
I haven't been here 6 years, but I get
you get it. He's been in the game 6 years. Galloway, he only had two turnovers. Okay, that's good. He's gone through all of this. It seems like nothing with this team is settled except Ware and Mbako. That's the only thing when I watch them play, it's like those two guys are comfortable and everybody else is just like, okay, I better get over here. It just doesn't feel like
this. I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd completely agree on Mbako, okay, at least.
Did I say Mbako? I meant Renew.
Okay.
Renew and Ware, excuse me.
No, I agree with that.
Yes.
Sorry. I said this to you last week. I said I've often felt like turnovers are a symptom of something else. They're a symptom of playing at a pace that is inappropriate for your personnel, or they're a symptom of an offense that struggles to do certain things that causes guys to take the wrong kinds of chances or allows defenses to cheat in certain ways. That, few teams commit turnovers because they're just like the ball. There's something when you're committing turnovers against teams that don't commit turnovers, it's because those teams have decided they can take those gambles with you that night because they know you will take the gamble that will open the door for them. And that's
you saw that in the Rutgers game. Indiana tried to play track meet with them early in that first half, and Rutgers didn't even track meet. Indiana doesn't really track meet, and you saw turnover.
Well, and the funny thing was,
like a table tennis game.
The flip side was that was a period in the game Indiana was in most control. I mean, like, and I'm not saying that Indiana should just keep turning the ball over. I just like, yeah, at very least you were imposing a pace on Rutgers that didn't want to play.
Yep.
It's when you are committing the turnovers just out of
catch the ball in the lane and travel.
You're
just happy feet. What are you doing?
Yeah. By the way, this is irrespective. It happened, I think, Gabe Cups on Tuesday night. Am I the only one that feels like there has been like a 400% increase in college basketball in players stepping on the sideline when they catch the ball behind the three-point line? I have seen it like three times a game.
It happened to Jameson Battle at Ohio State.
It's one thing when you're working the baseline. Your feet shuffle, you step out of bounds. Like, that happens.
Yeah.
But
we didn't
narrow the court. We didn't widen the three-point line. I don't understand why it is that this year it feels like I have seen like a four-fold increase in guys catching the ball, not trying to run the sideline and a defender just kind of rides them out of bounds.
Literally just catching it.
Standing there waiting for the kick out in whatever situation and their foot's on the line.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand. And number it's not one. Just an Indiana thing. It just happens. It's happening all the time.
Spacing is the biggest deal.
Yeah.
You want to be spaced, and you want to stretch it as far as you're going to stretch it. And I think the other part of that is, as well, if the pass isn't perfect, you're not going to come to the ball because you're taught to stay behind the three-point line. You don't want to have your toes on the line. It's a two. You lose a point that way. So if the ball comes to you and it's not perfect and you have to readjust, well, I don't know. But the whole point of that is that's fixable. That's an unforced error. And that's, I know you've pointed to the entire college basketball landscape on that. I don't see that happening to IU as much, but it's everywhere. And again, where you are on the court, what's your awareness? Are you getting double teamed every time? Why are you waiting to get rid of the ball? If you know you're going to get doubled, hey, let's make sure you're moving it. So some of the stuff, Renew's a sophomore. Where's a sophomore? Those turnovers are going to come a little bit more naturally because they're in the pile. What you can't do on a fast break is dribble it off your foot, throw the ball away, throw it off the guy's 7'1" guy's ankles. He's not going to catch it down there. Those are the turnovers that just and those relax.
Those are the ones where it feels like Indiana. That's where Indiana looks young, is like when it's two guys that aren't in that sink, that like you saw Xavier Johnson and Trace Jackson Davis, or you saw, you know, Trace Jackson Davis and like a Miller Kopp at times, where it's just like, yeah, you've just played so much basketball individually and together that there's just like a, you understand, you want the ball here, you want the ball there. I mean, again, this is the stuff that Indiana's got to try and grow through. And I see people, you know, sort of say, you know, Mike Woodson will say stuff like, we just got to go back to work. We got to just keep doing what we're doing. And people say, well, why don't you change what you're doing? And what I would say is, first of all,
we've done this for 3 years now.
Well, first of all, coaches will always tweak things more than they'll tell you.
Because you don't want to tell anybody that.
Because because Mike Woodson's not going to sit there and be like, well, yesterday's practice plan involved these 18
things. We're doing
things,
this. They're just not doing what I want.
Right? Yeah. Second of all, like, if it were that simple, every coach would do it in every sport ever. That is one of the most fundamental sort of like complaints you hear when a team is struggling, and I understand where it comes from, is why don't you change the way you're teaching this? Or why don't you change the way you're doing that? If it were that simple, it
nobody would lose.
There's a line in West Wing, and this is a bit of an exaggerated example of it, but there's a line in West Wing, and the president says that the people say the hardest thing to do in sports is hit a fastball. And he said, had a coach tell me once, the hardest thing to do in sports is to walk into the locker room at halftime of the Super Bowl and tell your team the game plan that's worked all year isn't working and it's time to change it. It's really easy to sit there and say, we're going to change everything about what we do. And you see movies about sports where there's some, you know, magical moment where the coach walks in and says, boys, I've let you down.
Well, that's where people
everything's going to change.
People get this point of view from.
But the problem is you can't do that nearly all the time, because you change it and it still doesn't work, then suddenly you've thrown out everything you were doing before.
And the baby with the bathwater.
And it's still not working. And then you're starting to lose your player's faith, because they said, well, he changed it and it still didn't work. And now he looks like he's groping around for choices. And now we're going back to the thing that didn't work before. If he had any confidence in the way we're doing it before, he wouldn't have changed it. So it's, I mean, like, this is where coaching gets hard in the sort of...
It's a little bit different than watching Ted Lasso for an hour, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this is where coaching gets hard in the process versus sort of performance thing, which is, you know,
I think the biggest complaint fans have is Indiana's not an elite program anymore, and what's going to take for that to turn it around? Is it NIL? Is it going to be Dusty May? Is it going to be – well, I don't know what the answer is to that, but we know everybody wants to be Kentucky. Everybody wants to be Kansas. We were at one time. What's it going to take to get back? We only have a minute or two left. Maybe it's a better question for summertime. That's the rub. The rub is this is the evidence that shows that we're continuously not an elite program.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
No, and
that's a problem.
And that's – here's the thing. That is the thing that underpins all of this, and the issue with that is a win against Minnesota on Friday night doesn't change that.
That's why nobody complains when they win.
You know, and
they
win
till the next loss.
It's right, and you're always in sports going to be a bit of a prisoner of the moment. That is inevitable. We are all that way. It is so hard to see the big picture, and it's harder when
that's what coaches get paid to do. That.
And we're getting very existential here, or very.
You only
of
got
like,
a minute, so
very
yeah.
fundamental. But like, people ask me a lot about IU, and you know, they say like, what is Indiana's analog in football? And I say it's Texas. I don't think it's Nebraska. I think it's Texas. I think there are some built-in advantages that will always be there: fan base interest, talent base, recruiting, all that kind of thing. also maybe not quite as good of a job as it thinks it is. There's some internal issues. There's some drama. There's a lot of like historical sort of angst that can manifest very quickly if suddenly 9-3 doesn't feel like a good enough season and this and that. Like Tom Herman won all four of his bowl games at Texas. He still got fired.
Getting there does.
The concern, what I tell people is it's what Indiana fans struggle with, and I understand it, is there is a residual, an undercurrent fear. What if it never comes back? And it's not I've said this forever, too.
Cubs fans.
It shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be this hard to be an Indiana fan. But in the same breath, sometimes you make it hard as a fan when you feel that panic. But I don't know. I don't think there's a way to tell a fan not to panic, because I understand the more basic fear.
You don't
fear.
Have to.
Well, but I understand the more basic fear, which is the further we go,
the further away we get from it.
Then why is it the less likely it seems like it's going to come back? And again, we're ending on the most big picture.
But you'll be back tomorrow for a little bit, so that's good. We'll talk more hoops with Zach Ostrom. We'll get you ready for Indiana, Minnesota tomorrow. Your Money with David Hayes is next. College Hoops is at